Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode of the Home Team Series with our guest host, Coach Joel Nellis, who is the head football coach at Brookfield Central. He was their conference coach of the year and has done an excellent job with this podcast series, which is now in its third season. We're excited to have him on and talk to coaches from around the country about things that affect their home life, the priority of family, and how they manage that, how they deal that with that in a very demanding coaching career. There's something to be learned from all of these coaches, whether that's ways that they manage their priorities, how they handle their scheduling, how they deal with staff, and how they bring their family around and make them part of it. So you'll pick up a little bit of the X's and O's, some things about their strategies, but a lot about how they're going to make their family a priority. Let's kick it over to Coach Nellis and his guest, Jake Moreland, offensive coordinator at Western Michigan.
Hello, coaches, and welcome to the Home Team Podcast, where football coaches from around the country provide the coaching community with improvements to their game plans for winning as a husband and a father. Today, we're going to be speaking with Coach Jake Moreland. Coach Moreland is third season at Western Michigan and entering his 11th season overall as an assistant coach at WMU. He was a four-year letter winner as tight end for Western Michigan. In his first season as offensive coordinator, he coached the attack that boasted the 33rd best rushing attack in the nation, and the team averaged 32 points per game and over 430 yards of total offense. Moreland was a co-offensive coordinator and worked with the Bronco offensive line the year previously before getting promoted to offensive coordinator in the spring. Moreland will continue to work with the offensive line this season. In his second stint at Kalamazoo, Moreland was also the tight end coach for the Broncos from 2005 to 2011. During the 2017 season, Western Michigan produced three offensive linemen that earned all Mid-American Conference honors. Offensive tackle Chukwuma Okafor and center John Kinoy were first-team selections. The Bronco offensive line helped pave the way for a running game that was ranked 23rd in the nation in rushing offense at 224 yards per game. Prior to returning to Kalamazoo, Moreland coached tight ends at Air Force from 2012 to 2014 and Syracuse in 2015. At Air Force, Moreland oversaw the development of several key contributors during 10-win seasons in 2014 and 16, which included victories in the Idaho Potato Bowl and the Arizona Bowl. Throughout his career, tight ends have had a period of success under Moreland, with three becoming semifinalists for the John Mackey Award given to the nation's best tight ends. Moreland served as a special teams coordinator and offensive assistant for St. Joseph's College in 2004. During his 2 years, Diploma set school records in 7 offensive categories. Prior to arriving in Rensselaer, Moreland made his coaching debut at Elmhurst College in 2003. During his college playing days, Moreland caught more passes than any other tight end in school history and is tied for touchdowns amongst tight ends. He earned All-MAC second-team honors and was tabbed as the 1999 Offensive MVP and was an All-MAC pick in 1998. Moreland went on to professional football career, playing for the New York Jets and Cleveland Browns. He retired in 2002, shortly after signing with the Texans. A Milwaukee native, Moreland earned his bachelor's degree in business administration and marketing for Western Michigan. He and his wife have 3 daughters, Courtney, Grace, and Emma. Coach Moreland, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, let's jump right in and start talking about the stars of your home team, beginning with your wife. How did you meet this special woman?
Well, I guess it's not that funny of a story. So growing up in Milwaukee, a lot of my friends went to Marquette University. When I would come home to visit family and decide to go out and hang out with my buddies, I ended up down at Marquette quite a bit. And the guys that I hung out with were also in her kind of circle of friends. And so we were introduced to each other through mutual friends and actually were really introduced to each other on spring break, as it turns out, in 1998, and stayed in touch through college. We both graduated in the year 2000, both moved to Chicago, and kind of romance kept building, and we ended up getting married in 2009. It took me a while. She knew, but it took me a while to come around. She's a smart one in the family.
No doubt about it. What is a character trait or quality that she has that makes her so special to you?
I think it's her caring She cares about so many things and in a genuine way. And you can tell when she gets into, it could be a project with the girls. We have three beautiful daughters. And so if she gets into a project with the girls, or if she is volunteering at school, or if she's volunteering in the community, or if she's working her job, I mean, whatever it is, she just cares so much and is so passionate about what she is going for, and it resonates. And I think people pick up on it and they want to be around that. And it makes being around her, it makes it very infectious, you know, when you watch her going to work.
Okay. Let's talk about those three girls. Those are the other members of your starting lineup. What are their names, their ages, and what makes them each unique or special to you?
So Courtney is my firstborn. She will actually turn 10 here in February 6th. Grace is my middle child. She just turned 8 in December, on December 20th. And then my youngest is Emma, and she will be 6 in April, on April 30th. So it's really, those three are really kind of funny. They almost kind of fit the molds that they're supposed to be in. The oldest being Courtney, she's very much a rule follower. She's very much a pleaser. She really wants, you know, she takes things very seriously. She, you know, if you tell her to do something, she is on it, and she really wants to make sure that she's doing it to everything to the best of her ability. The middle child, Grace, is a little bit of a free spirit, and you know, she's kind of trying to find her place. Obviously, being in the middle, you know, the oldest gets a lot of the responsibility and the youngest is the baby. And so she tries to figure out how does she fit into this whole thing. And she's really coming into her own in athletics. I feel like she's really taken a hold of soccer and softball and basketball. She just likes to be active. And so I think it's given her a little bit of a voice and helping her figure out a little bit where she fits. And our youngest, even though she is the youngest and she is technically the baby, she is the one that actually runs the house. Emma has the strongest personality out of all of us, and she is not afraid to let you know when she has an opinion about something. But she's super sweet. She's so much fun. But she definitely is. She inherited that from her father. I can tell you that for sure. So they are all, obviously, they're all different in their own ways. And but at the end of the day, I think, you know, what my wife and I are really trying to do is we're trying to raise really quality people. You know, and people that care about others and really show, and obviously we want them to be smart and intelligent and caring and all of those kind of things. But I think when we get feedback from other parents unsolicited, usually it's, oh, hey, your kids are so great. They're so polite. They're very nice, you know, those kind of things. And so that really makes me proud.
That's awesome. And I have three myself, and I definitely think those profiles line up. I know the young one definitely does have a strong attitude and a strong will. Holy cow. Yeah. So I get it. You get it.
Yeah.
Next, we're going to move into a section called We Make the Call and discuss how your family has navigated some of the important decisions throughout your career. We all know the commitment it takes to be a coach. How were those negotiations with your wife about your career choice?
There was no negotiation, to be perfectly honest with you. And I don't mean that in any kind of a weird way. I figured out very early that I was going to be a football coach in some way, shape, or form. I didn't know that it was going to be in college. I would have been perfectly content with being a high school coach and a teacher, but I knew that coaching is what I wanted to do. And when our relationship really started to take off, I was really getting into, I was leaving a Division II school and actually coming back to Western Michigan for my first Division I job. And it was a very, we were doing the long distance thing. She was still living in Chicago. She was doing an unbelievable job working for Chase Bank. And like I said, our relationship was really kind of taking off, and we were having some discussions about how do we want to move forward? What are we going to do? And without trying to be too much of a jerk, I was like, listen, this is what I'm going to do, and I need you to be okay with it. And if you're not okay with it, then I don't know if we can be together. Because if I'm not doing this, I'm not going to be able to give you the kind of life that I feel like you deserve, because I'm not going to be happy. And if I'm not happy, then nobody in the family is going to be happy. And so we were going down that road, and we had had quite a few conversations. And she, being such a strong woman, I mean, being an independent woman, she was okay with being with me saying, hey, look, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do this for us. And so I need you to buy into it. And she 100% has bought into it. And so once she said, yeah, I'm good with you being a college football coach, everything just kind of got it in line. And she moved to Kalamazoo, and we got engaged, and we got married. And so things have been really good. I will tell you that I don't make any decisions without discussing it with her. And it is truly a discussion. We lay it out, everything, you know, every move that I've made since we've been together has been one that we have discussed from front to back, positives, negatives. Should we do this? Should we not do this? What is this set up? All of those things. And so we are truly partners in the decision-making process since 2009. And so, you know, it's good because I want her, same thing. You know, it's a big deal. Before, when it was just her and I, not as big of a deal, but now that we, you know, this is a 5-member family. And it's not just me saying, hey, we're going to do this, because it affects everybody, you know, and especially having young kids, you know, we haven't gone down that path where we've really brought it up to them yet, but they're kind of getting to the age where they understand. It's Courtney and Grace, especially, you know, they understand what I do. And unfortunately, you know, there was a stretch there where we moved 3 times in 3 years. And, you know, it takes its toll. And I want to, that'll be probably the next phase will be, hey, if there's an opportunity, sitting them down and saying, hey, girls, this is, you know, this is something that we can do together as a family. What do you think? And take their input into consideration, because, you know, like I said, and if they all came to me and said, daddy, we do not want to move, we don't want this to happen, I would probably have a really hard time doing it.
Right.
Unless it was just a no-brainer thing that we just, you know, something that we had, hey girls, we just have to do this, you know. But unless it's something like that, I want everybody's input, because, you know, I want this family to function correctly, and I want everybody to know that their opinion counts, you know, and make sure that they know that it matters to me.
Yeah. You kind of addressed the next part, or already that part with your kids, and I think that you're right. You know, at a certain age, you do need to take their input. But when you and your wife have sat down and talked about jobs, what are things that you evaluate together before making that decision? Like, what are some things that maybe, it could be at the high school level, it could be at the college level, what are some things, you know, that guys may want to look out for as you and your wife discuss, like, hey, should we go here? Should we not? Should we stay? You know, those sort of situations.
Yeah, I mean, the very first thing that we look at, right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, we talk about the financial aspect. You know, is this a good move for us financially? You know, are we going to be able to do what we need to do and make sure that we're providing what we need to provide for the girls from a financial aspect? And once that kind of gets locked in and we're like, yeah, we feel like this can probably work and this can probably be good, then we start inspecting other things, such as, you know, what kind of stability are we going into? You know, what does this look like? Is this guy rolling through, you know, offensive coordinators, or is he rolling through offensive line coaches? You know, this guy's fired 3 offensive line coaches in 3 years. I don't know that maybe that's not a great move. Maybe that's not a great sign, you know, things like that. I think now, to me, you know, stability is a big deal. You know, one of my apprehensions to getting into coaching was the fact that everybody that you talked to had moved their family 20 times, you know, in 25 years. And I don't want to do that. You know, I don't. And I've been very fortunate where I haven't had to move around a whole lot, which has been great, I think, for our family dynamic. But so, yeah, we look at financial. I want to know about the stability. I really want to know about the staff, you know. And so when I go out, you know, when I've gone on interviews and things like that, you know, you get a feel for the staff and you get a feel for the guys and things like that. And so these are all things that I'm kind of reporting back to my wife, like, hey, this is what I'm feeling. This is what I think, you know, and, you know, those things. And then we start really getting into the, okay, where could we live and where are the best schools? You know, what does this all look like? Are we, you know, and so does it, if we can make sense of those kind of top 3 or 4 things, I think, and things all look good, then we kind of proceed with, yeah, this would be a really good opportunity for us.
Okay. Consistency and discipline is a big thing in parenting. You know, with being apart as much as you are, particularly during the season, how do you and your wife communicate and deal with discipline issues with your children?
So my wife she gets to be a stay-at-home mom when she's not running her business. She's got a couple businesses that she does run, so I know that she is, she's also pretty busy during the day. But, you know, the thing that I try to do is I try not to come in and disrupt what she has going, especially during the season, because I'm not around, you know, and especially on later nights and things like that. And really what I try to do is I just try to back her up and make sure that the kids know that this is, you know, mom and dad are a unified front. And if mom says something, dad is behind it, you know, kind of a thing. And so we, you know, now when they go to bed and things like that, and she kind of catches me up to what's going on and things like that, then we talk about what kind of, if there needs to be some kind of a discipline and a discipline action, you know, and things like that. And then once we come up with this, with what the actions are going to be, we communicate them with our girls and we tell them, hey, listen, for these kind of actions, this is going to be the consequence, just so you know, and so you're aware. And so I do think that I can probably get a lot more done because I follow through pretty swiftly with what I tell them is going to be a consequence.
Yep.
So, you know, they know that when something is stated and when we've communicated it to them, they know that we mean business about it. And so that's the way it goes. I feel like the communication that we have sets us up for success where, you know, and you know, they're kids, so they're going to try and push some boundaries and figure some things out and those kind of things. But at the end of the day, you know, we really just try to back each other up and make sure that we're coming up with something that is consistent so that our kids know exactly how they can proceed.
Sure. The third series of questions will involve what I call clock management and how you spend your time to blend family and football. When taking a new job, can you give our listeners one recommendation about moving and one thing to avoid? Like, you've moved a couple times. You moved 3 times in 3 years. You've done it. You've done it. I'm guessing, hey, this is the thing you need to have because I either didn't do it one time, right? Or, hey, you should not do this because I tried it and it did not work out well.
Yeah. You know, we've been really fortunate with the places that we've gone where we have had an opportunity for movers to come in and pack up our whole house, get it on the truck, and then unpack it.
Okay.
And I would say if that's something that is pretty great, you know, so now there's going to be situations where they may not be, you know, where a school might not be able to give you a bunch of money and you may have to do it yourself. I totally get it. But if you have a way that you can even take care of part of it, you know, and let somebody else do it because it's, you know, you're running around and you're trying, you know, for me, I'm thinking about all the things that I have to do when I get to the new job. Plus I'm thinking about, you know, is my wife and the girls going to be taken care of and how are they going to get there? And I need to get them transportation to the new setup. And, you know, there's a million things going on. And so if you can have somebody come in and pack, that takes a lot of onus off of you. You know, at least one thing that you can check off the list. This is going to be done. I don't have to worry about this kind of a thing. So I would definitely recommend doing that if you have the ability to do that. I don't know. I've had really good success.
Okay.
You know, our last few moves. That's kind of a hard question. To be honest with you, my wife would probably be able to come up with a list of things because she, unfortunately, something that she's become very good with, you know, because we've had to move so much. She's kind of a pro at it now. And I'm not sure that that's something that she necessarily wanted to be a pro at, but it's kind of happened that way. So that's a good one. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, unfortunately.
Oh, that's all good. If you've had success, don't change it. Don't go looking for that problem.
Yeah, right.
With the long hours you do have, what are things you do weekly to stay engaged and interested in your kids' lives?
We read. I try to take time to read with them at night, especially check homework. I have them tell me something every day. I try to have them tell me something great that happened to them that day as they reflect on their day. And when I first started it, they were kind of like, well, recess was fun. I'm like, no, not recess, not lunch. You know, give me something, you know, and so we had to work at it, you know, and so now they kind of know that it's coming. So they have something prepared, which is good. But I want them to know that even though, yes, I devote a lot of time to football and to our team and things like that, that they are still my number one priority and that I still want to be engaged with their lives and I'm still interested in what they're doing. So I try to read with them. I try to look over their homework. You know, like in the mornings when we start early, what I do is I carve out about 5 or 10 minutes as they're kind of getting ready for their day. If I can, as long as we don't have meetings, and I'll FaceTime them. And we have some daily affirmations that we go through and things like that. Again, just so they know I'm trying to get their day started in a positive way, you know, and you know, again, I think it's about trying to be there, you know, when you can't, excuse me. And so getting into the off season now, which will be great. I'll have some more weekends with them and some more time. So we're going to go to a hockey game, you know, a couple hockey games this weekend. You know, we go to basketball games, and my oldest daughter just gave me the card for the daddy daughter dance is coming up in 3 weeks. So there's going to be some things coming up where I can really be engaged with them still and let them know that, that I, even though sometimes I'm not here, I'm still here.
Yeah. What about your marriage side of things? What are ways that you and your wife stay connected and help grow your marriage during the season? And I know the obvious one is, hey, we go to dinner on Thursday night. So maybe if you could share something that's yeah. maybe different from that. Yeah. I mean, I know like I've done a number of these things. It's like, hey, I had to like reframe the question because and I grew up around a football family, and like that was obviously the big night for them, the college staff. Like, hey, Thursday nights you're going to dinner and it's great. But like, is there other things, little things that you do so you and your wife continue to stay on the same page and grow it, not just, you know, get through the season?
I think obviously the date night is a big deal. And yeah. I think everybody tries to take advantage of it as much as they can. And, you know, to be perfectly honest with you, sometimes our date nights consist of sitting on the couch and watching the Thursday night football game, you know, and just kind of talking about what we've done that week or what's coming up and things like that. And sometimes that's okay, you know, but we definitely, you know, and everybody gets into ruts and things like that. And, you know, probably, you know, at some point during each month, one of us, if not both of us, look at each other and go, hey, when was the last time that it was just me and you, you know, and we need to go right. kind of do something, you know? And so obviously having kids and wanting to take care of your family and everything like that, I mean, they come first and foremost. But the thing that we always have to realize is as fathers, as husbands, is all of that. And then obviously, you know, putting a lot of strain with the hours that we spend coaching is that before these kids were around, it was just us. And if we're not good, then that's going to filter into the family, you know? So we're trying to plan some trips. I mean, to be honest, you know, we're same thing. It's like we just my wife just came with me down to the coaches convention. And as crazy as it sounds, we were able to carve out a little bit of time here and there to be able to spend some time together and just unwind and be with each other. So sometimes that's enough. You know, it doesn't have to be these big extravagant things. It's just sometimes just being able to be away from the kids and just share some private moments that are good to help rekindle and refuel, you know, what needs to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. What are events you've attended to watch your kids during the season? And maybe what discussion, if any, did you need to have with your head coach?
None. Our head coach is awesome. He is, it turns out he's one of my best friends. So that makes it, that makes it a little bit easy. Yeah. Right. So, but because he wants to be a great father and a great husband, anything that is pertaining to your family, he is really, really great about, hey, go do that. Do not even, and don't worry about, we'll figure it out. We'll get it done kind of a thing. You know what I mean? If we have to pick up for somebody, there has never been a recital, a match, a game, a doctor's appointment that you absolutely have to be at that you couldn't be at because the head coach said no. You know, we work it out, we figure it out, but he's great about allowing us to be dads and husbands. And so because it's so easy, you know, nobody takes advantage of it. But when there's something that comes up, you know, like obviously kids have, you know, they're in, you know, shoot, we had one of our coaches, his son broke his arm, you know, and he had to have some pins put in his arm. And I could tell he was kind of feeling uneasy about, hey, can I go to this thing? And I'm like, why are you even asking? Get out of here and go. Just, we'll take care of it. Don't worry
right,
about
get
it.
Out.
You know, go be a dad, you know, that because we got to take care of this first. And so it's really easy, you know, to be able to get there and do those kind of things. Luckily for me, my kids have been fairly healthy. I haven't had to miss anything really hey, you have to be here at the hospital. You have to do this. So, but yeah, soccer right. practices, soccer games, you know, practices and games and matches and all that kind of stuff is great. And, you know, if there's a little bit of a conflict or hey, can I bounce early to go do this? He's great about letting us go do that.
That's awesome. That doesn't happen everywhere. Yeah. So that's great.
No, it doesn't. we're fortunate.
No, I know. Yeah, no doubt. This is a big topic. I think it's a struggle for that I have personally. How do you manage your phone time when you're at home?
I literally don't have it. I don't have it on me. When I come home,
because you're a Division One coach.
It doesn't matter. My first order of business when I get home is the family. And so, especially at dinner, my wife and I, there's no technology at the table. We set our phones down. Okay. If somebody calls, I'm not answering it. Unless if the head coach calls, it's probably for a good reason, you know, that kind of a thing. But for the most part, I'm talking 99% of the time, our phones are down and we're engaged in conversation with each other. And so what I try to do, my kids go to bed at about 8 or 8:30. So when I get home, I try to just be there for them for a few hours until they go to bed. Now, once they go to bed, unfortunately for my wife, what happens is I may be on my phone for a little bit doing recruiting or doing whatever I need to do with that. Yep. But I try to take care of a lot of it during the day, you know, when I can. Phone calls are different. Obviously, you can't call kids or kids can't call you when they're at school and stuff like that. But I try to take care of a lot of it while I'm not home, so that when I am home, I can be present with my family. And I think that's what I just have to do. Because if you're holding it, you're going to look at it. Hey, what's going on in Twitter? What's going on in this? What's this recruit doing? You know, and so if I don't have it and I'm not thinking about it, then I don't worry about it. You know, that's just how I am. I don't know if everybody can be that way, but it works for us. It works for me.
How do you, as a coach or as a staff, work to prevent maybe chasing ghosts when you're game planning each week, so you're not spending, you know, an inordinate amount of time in the office for just being in the office for office sake?
We don't. Again, we have a great head coach that does not want, he's one of these guys that's like, hey, when we're here, we're going to work. When your work is done, go home. We're not going to be in the office for the sake of being in the office. And I'm the same way. And it's probably because we came up under the same guy that had that kind of a philosophy. And so that's what we do. We want to work efficiently. And, you know, the other thing that I have in my staff is I have trust. You know, when assignments get doled out and there's certain things that we're supposed to be looking for and certain things that you're responsible for, I trust that the guys are going to get done what needs to get done. And so because of the trust that we have on our staff, we're able to be really efficient with our time. Obviously, some things take a little bit longer than others. You know, I don't want to be a grinder for the sake of being a grinder. You know, sleeping in my office is something that I've never had to do. I hope I don't ever have to do it. I hope that the way that I spend my time is so efficient that I'm able to get things done that I need to get done. I can see the things that I need to see and come up with a plan that needs to be a good plan, a good solid plan that everybody feels good about. And of course, there's going to be tweaks here and there as you go through and you reevaluate film and you continue to look at those kind of things. But I think for the most part, we do a really good job of not having to chase ghosts. We know the things are there. We come up with a plan to, in case they want to do these things, we have a plan ready for them. But we really stay true to who we are, and we try to believe what we see on film, and we try to believe what we're writing down. You know, what our assessment is. Yeah. We try to really say, hey, this is what we see. This is what we're going to do. Let's go attack it, and we'll figure it out. And if that's not it, then we'll come up with another plan.
The final set of questions we'll call prevent defense, hopefully providing some of big picture things for a coach can prevent from losing what's most important. Can you share maybe one struggle you've had to overcome as a family or personally during your career, and what lessons other coaches can learn from it?
Well, I can tell you one of the things that I really struggle with is I take everything personally when we lose. Okay. When we lose, it's because I did something wrong. I didn't prepare myself enough. I didn't prepare my team enough. I didn't prepare. And that's a thing that I've always been that way. You know, that's just something that I legitimately am. The last couple of years, I've really tried to work on is just letting go, letting it go. Cause that's what I preach to our guys. You know, you can't hold on to a play that was either your very best play or your very worst play. It doesn't matter, because the next play is the one that you need to be concentrating on, you know. And it's one of those things that I have really struggled with, taking too much blame and turning it inside and really just being down on myself and not getting past it. And so it's a constant struggle, but it's something that I'm working on. I know that it's there. I know that it's part of who I am. I think it's part of it. It helps be a driver in some way, shape, or form, but not, it can't be a detriment, not anymore, you know? And so it's something that I'm really working on. And I don't know, you know, that's something that I know is in just in me. It's an innate thing that I have. I don't know if there's anything that I can really tell anybody or give anybody advice to, hey, to avoid this, you know, other than just be present. You know, and that's something I think that I have really been able to do the last couple of years is be present. You know, I'm trying to be more present in the moment. Like I was talking before about when I come home, I try to put my phone down and just be there with my kids or with my wife and just be present. And so same thing, be present where you're at as a coach. You know, too many times guys are looking for what's the next greatest opportunity for me? What's my next job going to be? What's the next this? And you miss all of the great things that you are currently involved with. And I'm trying not to miss anything, or I'm trying to miss less things, you know? And I think that's one of the things that we could do just overall, probably as a society, is slow down a little bit, you know, without going way down that path, you know, but be present, you know, be present where you're at. It'll make you a better father. It'll make you a better husband. It'll make you a better coach. It'll make you a better person.
That's great advice, Coach. Do you view modeling good parenting and being a good spouse as something that's important to the overall development of your players?
100%. I want my players to see me being a husband and a great husband. I want my players to see me being a great father. I want them to know that it's okay to work really, really hard and spend a bunch of time doing something that you love in your job, if you're able to do that, and then also be able to love on your kids and love your wife and be present for them as the male figure in the house. And so what I do is at least once a month, I try to have my players over to my house, you know, where they can see us interacting as a family. And I want them to know my kids, and I want them to know my wife, and I want them to feel part of my family. But I do, I believe it in my heart that part of us being coaches is showing our younger players what it is supposed to be like to be a man. And so they can model it, you know, and things that they see, they'll be able to model, or at least they'll be able to remember. And, you know, they can draw from that, you know, when they start to have their own families.
Going back to your players, a lot of guys, again, talk about bringing guys over for a meal. I think that's an awesome thing. Obviously, if you're feeding the O-line, that's probably, you know, it's a dangerous endeavor to get into, but, you know, you got to run with it a little bit.
No question.
But how do you, especially for that group, and I had a good talk with Coach from Winona State about this, but, you know, that's kind of an interesting group. There's a bunch of big dudes, and they don't always, you know, look the part. And how do you make them feel valued outside of their performance on the field? As people, as beyond what they can do for you as a coach, player, like, how do you make them feel valued beyond what they can just do in terms of playing football?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of the same mentality that I kind of have with my family, is one where, hey, look, when we're doing football, I want to talk to you about football stuff, you know, and when it's not football time, I want to know about your classes. I want to know about your girlfriend. I want to know about your family. I want to talk to them just like I talk to my kids. Tell me something great that happened in your life today. You know, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the value that we get from being able to create the relationships that we have is something that we take very seriously. All of us do on our staff. And so I try, again, it's a daily process, you know, and with 15 or 16 guys, you know, in the O-line room, it can be challenging because you can't reach everybody all the time. So you got to be a little bit selective on who you're talking to, but how you're talking to them and what you're talking to them about. Investing is investing in them. And if they feel like you're investing in them, then, you know, there's a whole other side to, you know, what it can do for them, what football can do for them, you know. But I have the offensive line, I think, is just, it's so funny because our head coach, I've heard him say this multiple times. He says the offensive line is the strongest union on your football team. Probably true. You know, a bunch of guys that get together, that it was funny. I was talking with one of my guys last week, and he goes, Coach, do you realize that we don't have any stats that pertain to being an offensive lineman? I say, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, think about it. He goes, what stats do we really have? He goes, the only stats that we have that pertain to us are actually highlights for the defense. Sacks allowed, offside, holding. Yeah. You know, he goes, we have zero positive stats. And I said, wow, that's actually very true. You know, I never quite thought of it that way, but you know, so I've got a really good group. They're a veteran group and they're a fun group to be around. So investing into these guys is not a challenge at all.
Great. The last question I call victory formation, and it's a little longer question, so you got to stay with me here on this. When the outside world looks at a coach, they will often judge them based on the wins and losses or the accomplishments of their players. But the legacy a coach can have on his players and his family can have a much more lasting value than anything that can be measured. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through coaching that maybe you couldn't do in any other profession?
Well, I think, first of all, I think it goes back to exactly what I was talking about in being a model for the young people that we get to interact with every day. You know, I want them to be able to see me being a dad. I want them to be able to see me being a husband. I want them to be able to see hard work and dedication. And I'm hoping that I'm providing a good model for success for something that they want to do. And it might not be in football, and that's okay. You can, but I'd like to think that I'd be working this diligently and being this proficient, you know, in whatever field I decided to go into. Being able to show that model for these guys, I think is huge. And to be perfectly honest with you, we go through the recruiting process, and the best part about recruiting for me is that I get to be completely honest with guys. And if they can't handle me being honest with them during the recruiting process, there's no way they will ever be able to handle me as a coach, because I'm just honest. You know, there's nothing personal about what we talk about on the football field. I'm trying to get you to be a better football player. Now, at the same time, if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing in the community, or you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing in the classroom, we're going to have a discussion about it. And it's going to be very frank and it's going to be very honest. So again, I think that's a model for success. This is my opinion, right? But I want my guys to know that I am investing in the 30-year-old version of them, not the 18-year-old version. They know that what we're going to do now. Yes, I'm going to get to be around you between the ages of 18 and 22, maybe 23, you know, those kind of things. But what is going to happen is I'm investing in you so that when you go to be a member of whatever community that you're in, when you raise the Western Michigan flag in your yard, I want people to look at you and say, wow, that guy came from Western Michigan University. I want my kid to go to Western Michigan University because I want my kid to be like him. Those are the kind of things, those are the kind of discussions that we have. And this begins when they're 16 years old, 17 years old. So they know, or at least I've told them, that I'm going to invest. And if you're willing to help me on this journey, then we can achieve some pretty good things. And wins and losses, I get it. That's what I bought into. I mean, that's part of the deal. But unfortunately, nobody looks at the hours that we spend on the phone consoling a kid because his mom passed away, or, you know, the amount of time that we spend with a young man trying to figure out, hey, coach, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, you know, and you know, all of those kind of things. I mean, we're counselors, we're teachers, you know, we're coaches, we're dads, we're husbands, we're brothers, we're shoulders to cry on, you know, we're supposed to be all these big macho tough guys, but at the same time, they're still kids. And when they know that we're investing in them, you know, and investing in their future, that's the best part, is that we tell them we're investing in their future. And then we lay out a plan for how that's going to happen and what that looks like. And when they buy into it, I mean, they take off and you're able to see real success.
Well, coach, I think that's an incredible answer. And it's actually wrote down on my whiteboard, the thought about investing in them for them to be great 30-year-olds, not necessarily great 18-year-olds or maybe those tougher conversations. So I think that's a perfect way to phrase it. We really appreciate your time. I know you're just getting off a convention and, you know, looking forward to some time with your family, which I think is awesome. You know, I wish you best of luck in the off season and getting things together. And obviously we'll be pulling for Western Michigan here in the future.
Thanks for having me. It was great talking with you.
thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.